Let us take that miracle step by step, because you remember it says it's a sign. The first thing about what we learn, as you sort of picture it, when people think about Christ, what sort of a person was he? Was he the kind of person sort of you would like to invite to a wedding or to a party? You know, certain people you would like to have at weddings and parties and get-togethers, because they either get things going, or they're nice to talk to, or easy sort of friendly type, and you would like to have them there. Others you would say, well, you can't have these folks there because they'll ruin the whole thing. They're okay somewhere else, but they're not here. But at this wedding, Jesus' mother was invited, and Jesus was invited too. So great was his reputation amongst the people who invited him that they said, oh, bring all your disciples with you. If you are that kind of a person, obviously the folks you pick will be okay and welcome at this. So it says, both Jesus was called and all his disciples to the marriage. Alright, so that tells us a little bit about the person we are talking about. He was welcome, he was a very, very popular person. And when he came, there was not going to be a sort of a dull and dreary affair. He was very, very popular with those common people. Then it says in verse 3, and when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said unto him, they have no wine. In other words, the wine had run out. Because it's unthinkable that at a Jewish wedding, they would have no wine. So they had wine, but there was more guests turned up than they thought, and the wine ran out. He says, when they wanted more, so that was good wine you gave us, could you have a bit? Imagine, thought, master of ceremonies, well, no more. Didn't expect so many people to come. So Christ's mother came to him and said, they run out of wine. Quite a sort of calamitous state of affairs at any banquet, least most of all a wedding. And Jesus said to him, her, woman, what have I to do with thee? That sounds a little bit sort of hard or harsh. My hour is not yet come. Well, what a strange connection when you come to think of it. What's he talking about? She just asked a simple question. They run out of wine. And he says, that's nothing to do with me. What's that got to do with me? My hour hasn't come. I shouldn't be doing things at this stage. I've got to wait for the opportune time, in the fullness of time. He straight away was thinking on another level. Anyway, he said, Jesus said unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? My hour is not yet come. His mother said to his servants, now here's some very, very good advice from his own mother, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And I would think that's a key text in this whole parable. Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. In other words, she had realized that even though his hour hadn't come to do something, he was going to do it. Because of the situation. And bear in mind, this is not just an ordinary miracle he's going to do. You don't start off with just a mediocre miracle. This is a miracle which is actually meaning something. This is a sign. This is a miracle which is a dramatized prophecy, which he's going to do at a certain time. And even though that time hasn't come, he'll do the miracle as a sort of forecast of it. As an object lesson. There were 6 water pots of stone after the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. That's a firkin, by the way, is about 9 gallons. So this is about 27 gallons. So these big water jars were about that size, quite, you know, 25 to 30 gallons each. And there were 6 of them. So we're talking in the region of about 150 gallons of water. Jesus saith unto them, fill the water pots with water. Fill these 6 containers with water, and you're going to end up with 150 or 180 gallons of water. Now you can imagine the amount of people at this feast. They're already run out of wine, and fill this whole crowd up. Not one of them, say 27 gallons of wine, I'm going to make that, that'll do plenty. But 150 or 180 gallons of wine. So this is a big party, isn't it? They've already run out of wine, so more people came than expected. He brought all his disciples, and probably a lot of others sort of gatecrashed too, and they saw he was there. So here we are with six water jars now with about 150 gallons of water in them. And they filled them, it said, to the brim. Because she had said, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And he said, fill them. So they filled them right up to the top. That's quite a weight each one. And he saith unto them, draw out now. Don't draw while you're sort of filling up, but draw out when they're full. That's quite important. Because if they had sort of filled half and then started drawing, it might well have been, I don't know, but I'm just supposing, it might well have been that if they were half full, you would have got water out. But when they were filled to the brim, when you started drawing out, lo and behold, in front of their eyes, a miracle began to take place. When they filled these up with water, there was real water all right. But when they started taking it out, lo and behold, it was wine. Can you for a moment just put yourself in that picture and in that situation and think of what was happening? These servants must have said, there was quite a few of them, because it says servants, not one servant. Look at that. We put water in there, and look what's coming out. And no doubt the servants must have said, is it colouring powder? What is it? Could you imagine the servants might have tasted that? And it's not only wine, but it's the best wine they had ever tasted. And they bear it to the ruler of the feast. Because Christ had said, draw out now and bear it to the governor of the feast. And they bear it. These servants all walked up with jugfuls of wine. Here's wine. He must have, where did that come from? When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, I should imagine he himself must have thought, I know we've run out, we didn't prepare for this crowd. There was no way we thought so many people would come. What have we all done? He told us to fill the water jars and bear out, so we've done it. Looks like wine to us. In fact, it is wine. He said, he tasted the water that was made wine. And he knew not whence it was. In other words, he didn't know where it had come from. He thought to himself, oh, it's wine all right. I can't sort of imagine preparing for this. He didn't sort of bother. Maybe some guests had come and said, oh, it's a lack of wine. Let's bring in some ourselves. Go and call for it. Go to his house. He's got a cellar full. He says, the servants knew that it was water that had been made to wine. But the governor of the feast called the bridegroom. He thought, something strange here. This is unusual. This wine I've just tasted is the best wine. And the stuff I had, say, half an hour or an hour ago was not so good. So he called the bridegroom. And he asked the bridegroom, he says, every man, and this is true, every man, and this is mankind's style of doing things. Whenever we do things, this is the way we do them. Every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine. In other words, if we want to impress people, we put the very best foot forward. We give them the best first. And then lo and lo, as time proceeds and they begin to know us better, they see that we're getting worse, or we're not as good as they first imagined. And that's man's style of doing things. It's always flashy first, and then it deteriorates. And God doesn't work that way. His style is, he gives you the worst first. And then it gets better and better and better and better. And that's why we have all the suffering and the pain in this world now. Let's get it over with. And then all through eternity, it will be getting better and better and better. Because man and God work in a totally different way. And the governor said to the bridegroom, every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, in other words, when they're not so with it, then the worse, that which is worse. But thou hast kept the good wine until now. That's right. Because this was a sign. And this is the way God works. And it says here in verse 11, this beginning of miracles, or this first sign, did Jesus in Cana of Galilee. And he manifested his forth, his glory. I honestly think that that's what's going to happen with the Christian church. I don't for a moment think that the Christian church started with a great, powerful show in the book of Acts and then sort of petered out and got worse, and end up with a shambles. I think when the wine has run out, and right at the end of this age, they'll say, there's no more wine. There's no more wine. The water jars are all empty. The wine skins are all empty. The churches are all empty. And then Christ will do his real miracle. And I personally think when he said that sentence to his mother, woman, my hour is not yet come. His hour is not yet come. His day has not yet come yet. But it will come. And when his hour comes, the whole universe is going to see what he will set forth for the folks who come to the wedding banquet. But as a foretaste, as a forecast, as a little indication of what it's going to be when his hour does come, he gives this little miracle. Fill up these water jars. What are the water jars? Well, I should imagine the water jars are groups of believers, or believers themselves. We are like wineskins. And when you look at the Bible and see sheep, and he's the good shepherd, what are we? We're the sheep. When you look at the gardens or the fruit trees, and you see branches and trees bearing fruit, what do they stand for? They stand for believers. When you look at the grain in the field, and think of the lessons God is telling us in them, what is this harvest? We are the harvest. And every stalk of grain is an individual believer. So, when you look at the wine water pots, who are the water pots? These ordinary utensils which are made in the East, huge big water jars. These were stone ones, but so they're quite big, not particularly polished and refined. Who are they? What are they? What do they represent? I think they represent people. Christian believers at the end of the age. Empty believers. I honestly think he's going to fill us. Fill. Bear in mind, they began to pour out the water when the jars were full. What lessons can be learned from that? I personally think it's only when people are totally dedicated to Christ that wine will begin to flow. I don't really think, and even though it's a sad truth, it's a fact, when you serve God with all your heart, with all your mind, when you're, sort of say, brimful, then he can work. Because he said, and when they had filled them to the brim,
Then he said, draw out now. If they had started drawing out when they were a quarter full or half full, it's quite possible that water would have come out. I don't know, I'm just assuming that. But when they had filled the water pots to the brim, he said, draw out now. And people don't know sometimes, especially the folks who are actually benefiting from the water that's turned to wine. They don't know where it's come from. That's not important where it's come from. The water jars are not the important thing. The people, we are not the important thing. It's the wine that God has, put forth. And when we put forth truth in these last days, it's the water that's turned to wine that's important, not the water jars. And then, Christ, in his great glory, he does something in a totally reversed way. The Christian church, I honestly believe, is going to reach a stage now, coming up just before his hour comes, when the best wine is going to be put forth, the greatest truths, and put forth from ordinary water jars. So, it says here, this beginning of miracles Jesus did in Cana of Galilee. He manifested forth his glory. So when you think of yourself, you say, well, what sort of vessel am I? You know, you might think, well, I'm not a very refined or polished or educated or rich or influential or talented person. But you might compare yourself to an ordinary water jar. A stone water jar, which is not particularly beautiful or, shall I say, glorious. But Christ can use us. And he can only use us, if we are to learn any lessons from this, is when we are filled to the brim, when we are dedicated. When we are used, these jars were used for the purification, it says. So they are pure jars, they are clean jars. They were used for a specific purpose. And I personally think that Christians in their walk, if they are true, might not be very, very, expensively built stone water jars, but they were pure because they were used for purification. They were not dirty themselves, they were clean. Right? One. They were full, too, and they were there at the important time. And they held a lot. Each one held 27 gallons. So they were big, right? These jars were clean, they were big, they were pure, and they were there. Those 3 points. They were there at the right time, they were big, and they were pure. And that's why Christ used them. And when that was poured out of them, oh, lo and behold, the whole marriage, which could have ended up as a bit of an embarrassment, it was a success. Wine, by the way, is a symbol of happiness and joy. And Christ used that first miracle at Cana to declare his glory. Bear in mind, he can do that with us too. Amen.
So let us pray for these young ones. Blessings.